Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big money on your next painting project. Now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for being here. I love to do the 8 o'clock morning shows, but I had a flight out, 5 a.m. Flight out at 8. And unfortunately, there was just horrible weather. And so that caused extreme delays. And I got to tell you, we were never left the plane and we were on. I thought there was a rule against doing this, but guess not, because we were on the plane straight through 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 30, almost 6 hours, not leaving the plane. Of course, no food service. I was dying. So the first thing I did was eat, of course, grab something to eat, just a fast food place. But anyway, enough of that. I'm on a little bit early, and this is why. I just wanted to give a shout out to my brother. Today is his birthday. We're celebrating his birthday. He turns 50. And I know for some of you who might have been following me for any length of time, I have a brother who has cerebral palsy. Basically, what happened was he was born breech and he was deprived of oxygen for about 10 seconds. And that caused, of course, a severe palsy in the fingers and toes and things. And also, you know, some. Now he has special needs, but he actually is so high functioning. And for anyone who has somebody in your family that's special needs, I just wanted to say a couple of things before we get on with the meat of the show. One is that one day I was literally watching 60 Minutes, I think it was, and I see this show about, I think it was Eastern New Mexico State University, I believe. You guys can check me on that, but I believe that's right. And I saw that they offered a program where people with special needs, and my brother's very high functioning. He's intelligence-wise is probably like a senior in high school. It's just more, I would say, emotional and sort of world understanding, maybe like 12 in there. But it's something that I discovered because of this show, 60 Minutes, I think it was, they have a program that teaches very high functioning special needs people certain trades. So what he did, he took the restaurant trade, and what he learned was to do was, for instance, change condiments, also keep up with a salad bar, a relish bar, you know, handle those types of restaurant functions. He was there for 2 years, so he actually got an associate's degree in this, and it's really cool. So if any of you know anyone that maybe is really high functioning, I don't think the age matters. I think my brother went when he was, I want to say, in his 20s. It was just amazing for him because it was the first time he was really out on his own. And then, so fast forward, now he's turning 50. And I want to bring this up. When he turned about 45, it was a very interesting juncture in his life because he really wanted to be out and be out on his own. And a lot of talk and a lot of look into every group home under the sun in a huge metroplex where, you know, where we're from. And that whole thing, we just could not quite, it just didn't seem right because he was so much higher functioning. And so what we did, and all the credit in the world to my parents and actually to one of my brothers, he currently, for about the past 5 years, is in I don't even want to call it an old folks home, but a whole old folks sort of community. He has his own apartment. It's beautiful. Like when you drive up, it's just beautiful inside. It's beautifully decorated. I mean, it just feels so warm, and they do games and they have all these functions that they do. They have little softball-like tournament things. They do all these, obviously bridge and cards and all of these very organized. And so my brother, of course, is probably 30 years younger than most everybody there or more. And he has assimilated, and it's been such a beautiful experience for both sides, because he physically can do anything. He might be palsy, but he can do anything. And he's strong. And so, you know, they reach out for him to help with different things, and, you know, vice versa. I think they provide for him a sort of relationships and everything that mean a lot to him. So actually, we're having his big 50th at this home. And he doesn't know this, but my boy children have been just his favorites. They grew up as like Robin and Batman playing games and stuff. Of course, then my boys got older, but he wanted so bad for my youngest son to come. And I really thought there was no way we were going to be able to do it, but we were able to pull it off. So the birthday present we're going to give him on a total surprise is going to be my youngest son being there. And I know he is just going to lose it. He's going to be so thrilled to see him. All right, let's see. I think it's showtime. Hopefully I didn't talk good. I only talked 1 minute over starting on time. So I always like to start on time. I seem to be more delayed, but now we're right on time. I wanted to give you guys that story because it's very personal and important to me and why I'm flying around today. Nancy Guthrie, that's who we're going to be discussing today. And Nancy Guthrie disappeared on February 1st. For those of you who don't know it, she's 84 years old. The mother of Savannah Guthrie, very famous Today Show host. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting for those of you who watched the show with Greg McCrary. And if you have not watched the show with Greg McCrary, this was John Douglas's partner at the profiling unit before it was ever called the behavioral analysis unit, before it was called the behavioral science unit. They started the whole unit, and understanding how criminal behavior is repeated, how you can identify certain behaviors in people, and it identifies certain actions that they're going to take. It's just amazing. And it really started with him and Ressler and John Douglas. So anyway, if you can have a chance to listen to him. And I say this because, and I don't really know how old Greg is. He has been my mentor for probably, in other words, we work for the same firm, if you will. This firm, they have two sides of the house where I work. One half is strictly providing security for wealthy, you know, high wealth individuals, which you can imagine, especially since Luigi Mangione decided to sneak up on somebody on a New York street, shoot him in the back. That was real brave. Ever since that cowardly act, you can imagine how this has really kicked off. So most of the people that work with us, almost entirely FBI, former FBI, that side of the team is almost all hostage negotiators and former SWAT. So it's kind of cool because every time I go back and we have a little get together, I get to see all the SWAT and HRT guys that I've intersected with ever since I was a young pup and could do all that. But the other side that began about 6 years ago, and when it began, it was really just me and a guy named Phil Hayden, who is he's probably the most famous expert that's with the firm, although he's retired basically now, a lot of health issues, just lost his wife. That's what I'm talking about. These people who have all this ridiculous, you know, 50 years, 60, you know, 30 years in the Bureau, and then 30 years after the Bureau doing expert cases and learn, you know, still being in the midst of casework and debriefs and understanding crime. We're losing these people right and left, and it's a dying breed because, you know, a lot has changed. You can imagine under Comey, so much changed. And then, of course, under Kash Patel, So it's a dying breed of dinosaurs, these guys, for sure. And Greg was on, again, I don't know how old he is, but, and he, his mind is so young and he acts so young. If you see him in person, he's very fit and very young acting. But if you can catch those two episodes, you know, I normally don't plug these episodes, but these, and I need to pare it down because we had an issue with him not being able to hear me. And then we sort of start all over. So we actually got kind of two episodes out of it because he told me he only had a half an hour. And so I was just so grateful because he doesn't do much without payment anymore. You know, he's a public speaker. He has multiple books. He is an expert. And his rate is unbelievable. So anyway, for him to give us 2 hours of his time was so generous. But anyway, please catch that because he gives us so many nuggets about Nancy Guthrie, about his thoughts on Nancy Guthrie from what he knows. And he really studied up on the case too, which I know took him time to take the time to read about it. So please watch those. But I want to talk today about a couple of things. It was so funny because it was Friday morning. And right before, and then of course, right after the morning show, which I think I did the morning show, it was with him, so I got done late. My phone was blowing up from all these media outlets saying, oh my gosh, are you seeing this? You posted about, actually there was a write-up, I think it might've been in Newsweek, all about jammers and about that I think it's a handheld radio to radio. And I said, no, I didn't even know which article it was because, you know, I've done some articles on various parts of this case, but nevertheless. So after that, you know, then a lot of people were talking about it. Of course, Brian was, News Nation. We saw a lot of different venues talking about it. And I just wanted to be kind of clear about this. We know that the FBI was in the neighborhood, and let me remove that one. That is not the one I want. And we know that they were perusing, I should say re-canvassing again, which is very concerning, but at least one of the questions they were asking about, and I say it's concerning because it seems like they really are starting all over. And if they're not starting all over, if strictly they went to ask one question, which I don't think so. I really believe they went to do a complete re-canvass with probably how it should have been done in the first place. Not saying it wasn't. I shouldn't say that I know it wasn't, but I wonder. I hypothesize that it might not have been done how I've been involved in them. And that is you get together with all your case agent folks, with the people on your team, and you say, come on, let's get the questions together. What are we going to ask these neighbors? And I'm worried since things maybe were going so fluid, maybe they didn't do this, but normally that's how you do it. And now you have a list of 20 questions that every neighbor is getting asked. And that way, you know, it's asked and it's been answered, because no matter what, it's either no or I wasn't in town or whatever it might be. And of course, this would be on that list that should be on the list from the beginning is, did you have any, you know, any hiccups in your Wi-Fi again during that time frame? Most people are going to be asleep, so they won't know, but they could have found out afterwards if they looked. In this particular case, there was one person that said they didn't have Wi-Fi, I guess, all night. I wonder if that was a battery issue. I don't know. I just don't know how much to make of this, because this is a scanner, everyone. Now, do they have some smaller models? Yes, but they wouldn't be able to be effective from the distance that these houses are at. Let me show you again Nancy's house. You see the distance? I think her house sits on about an acre. Actually, I wanted to put up the schematic of her house so you could see it's a house, and then there's a cabana, and then there's a big pool area, and I think it's on about an acre. And some of these houses are sitting on, I think, up to 3 acres, maybe even more. They're sort of spread out. A scanner would do nothing from this distance. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Plus, they have to deal with brick walls. And just say bad guy has scanner, which we can't totally rule it out. It's a question being asked. We have a neighbor who apparently didn't have it all night, which I could think of a lot of reasons. But this would be something, and I brought this picture up because I want you to see how in the a few feet, let's just say 6 feet from the person who's being broken up because he's closer to the Wi-Fi with his scanner. But look at how clear the guy in the background is. Even the other guy is not that great, but look at that guy. They had to get that scanner, and these are professionals, if you will, burglars, if you want, you know, they're making their money doing it. So I guess they're professionals. Look at how clear the other guy is. And it's not until that scanner gets closer, even using a high-grade scanner, you're going to see this. In fact, the distance is about 20 feet for, and that's if you can even buy one that's of this really great quality. I've watched a couple of interviews of scanner experts. And one expert who discussed the scanners, and he says basically these are the ones you would be using with these multiple antennas, that there, you know, that this would have caused this picture to look much different. And in other words, like this. It doesn't make, you know, just nothing happen. You still have something. It's garbled. And you have to be very close. He said in his professional opinion, he doesn't think one was used. Then if you go to Jesse Weber, he had a professional on, and he said, which was exactly my question, why in the world are you going to need to, and did I put this one picture up here? I might not have. I didn't. But why is bad guy, remember he goes and gets the bushes? And maybe I can quickly run and get that photo. No, I can't quickly get it. But remember the photo where he turns around, he goes and he gets all that brush, the heather or whatever it was, and pulls it and tries to obscure, I think is what he's doing. We don't know for sure, but that's what it would seem. If you had a scanner, why are you going to do that? Why are you going to take the camera? Why are you going to go through those links? The other thing is we have all these pictures that are really pretty clear. Nothing that looks like this. Okay. Nothing. The other thing is, and this is a misnomer, some people call them Wi-Fi jammers. I've been saying Wi-Fi jammer. I should have never said Wi-Fi jammer. It's a signal jammer because it jams a particular frequency. Well, the frequency is not only used in Wi-Fi, it's used in Bluetooth. So if you are going to muddle a signal, this would work on all these signals because they actually are on the same frequency. So I think that's the important point. A lot of people say, oh, well, the Wi-Fi wouldn't have worked on the Bluetooth. Well, it would work on the Bluetooth because it's on a signal. Now, I don't want to profess, or it's like the blood spatter. I don't want to say I'm any sort of expert. I don't sell these. I don't make these. But I can tell you from a law enforcement standpoint, you have to be close. They do not work far away, as this is a perfect picture of. And they're going to look, the ones that are going to be able to do this, more like this. The antenna in this guy's pocket is small. And yes, I looked and I actually was able to see two of these that had the longer antennas, but a single antenna. But that is never going to work at the range that you would want this to happen at. I'm just very skeptical. I don't think it's a scanner. I think it's a two-way phone. I wanted to show, did I have that picture? Oh, shucks. No, I do. Here we go. So these are sold at Walmart. This is what I'm picturing when I see the outline in the pocket. And then when I see that little antenna sticking up, and there are better pictures floating around of this antenna. This reminds me of this. Is it that? I don't know. But that's what I think. And I think this is why, and this is the bigger picture. My question has always been, why are we on day 35, everyone? Why are we on day 35? It was a lot different when you looked at the Brian Koberger case. when you looked at, or Idaho 4 case, when you looked at that case, you didn't have anybody on video except their car, which he got caught with that. And then, of course, we had the audio picked up by the Ring at the next door neighbor. So you could hear the scuffling. You could hear the dog bark. You could hear even kind of faint sort of, not screaming. I would never call it screaming, but whimpering, you know, the noise we heard. So, you know, there was a lot less to work with, in my opinion, compared to this, everyone. Not that one. Certainly this one. And then I've got the close-up one where I just scanned it in where he's a little closer. I mean, my gosh, as I've always said, somebody knows who this guy is 100%. So anyway, but I never could understand, why is geofencing not working, everybody? Why is geofencing not working? Why don't investigators have whose cell phone was there and who didn't stick out? Now, it could be, of course, we have to consider that the perpetrators didn't even bring a cell phone at all. In other words, just say that's not a scanner there, or I mean, I don't think it's a scanner. Let's just get off that, that it's not a two-way radio. But let's think about the fact that could it be that he had his cell phone and just had it turned off, and so therefore we don't see the signal? Well, I could tell you, law enforcement just isn't looking over Nancy Guthrie's house. They are looking in that neighborhood. They're looking at the approach. They're looking at what we call choke points to a neighborhood. I always thought it was cool at Brian Laundrie's house. So Brian In and I would set up there. And we set up just to the left of the choke point because Brian Laundrie's house was just to the left of that. In other words, they had this T intersection that came in and then it went right and left. And so they were just to the left of it as you were facing. And that is an absolute choke point because it chokes the person out to either go right or left. So it's a great place to set up because you could see who enters, who goes right and who goes left. That's what I mean by choke points. So they were going to be looking at all the choke points in this neighborhood, which there's a lot of choke points in Nancy's neighborhood. This is kind of a labyrinth of roads. And I really should have put a schematic up here so you could see it. I also need to put the schematic up of the interior of her house so you can all see how open this is. But I will do that next time. But this labyrinth, that's what they're going to be looking at for geofencing. What cars were at the choke points? So that's my question. Could a scanner have been used by an accomplice at houses where they thought they had cameras? Could that be possible at these choke points? Were they that sophisticated to know what I'm telling you right now, to think about jamming choke points? I tell you, I think this is my problem with thinking anything like that happened. And that is, wow, the risk. Now you're really putting yourself up there. I mean, you're getting within 20 yards of a house. Literally, you hold this thing up. You can kind of see, I put out the video, which this video was great. It was done by a local news station that caught these burglars doing this. You know, this is this burglar ring that kept burglarizing around them. And I want to give some credit where it's due because, again, I really, and I know you guys do too, I love to eat up different information from different people. When I say eat up, I want to look. I want to see what's going on. And some of these smaller accounts have some really cool stuff. And this isn't even actually a small account. When it comes to YouTube world, I think he's really big. I've always liked this guy. His name is, I think, Ikmel. And I like this guy because I think he's a stand-up guy. He could have easily, for instance, with the Karen Reed case, a lot of people just, the minute they knew that where you could make the money, where you could get the clicks and views, where people would, is if you went on the side of Karen Reed, because there was this huge movement against local law enforcement, against public corruption, and it was exacerbated by an amazing propagandist who was involved and paid a lot and was directed directly from Karen Reed because all these emails are coming out. It's nothing we didn't know, text messages, but we're seeing it in black and white now. All I'm saying is This would have been an account that could have folded because he got eaten alive when he just said his thoughts on the matter. And to me, he was so stand up for how he viewed the facts and how he viewed the case and the Occam's razor approach he had. So anyway, I like to peruse him, and that he turned me on to this video. And I was glad that I was perusing by because it was exactly what I was looking for. Of course, there's a million of them out here, but this one made it easier to get my hands on. Like I said, there's many examples that show what these devices do.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Okay, so let's move on. And again, this, I'm just going to add him. And thank you, Michael, for becoming a member. I really appreciate it. Okay, I don't know if you can see my cursor, but if you look at the circle, that circle is sort of the square. And then to the left, do you see that little point above the red circle? That's the antenna. And like I said, a lot of people have so many clearer pictures. But nevertheless, that's what I was looking at. I want to talk about really quick the ransom notes. And I'm circling back on them because remember the ransom demand that was made directly to Annie and Tommaso literally went directly to their phones in text message form. And these ransom demands tried to get Bitcoin, and it was horrible what this person did. By the way, he got out on $20,000 bond, which is all you have to pay is 10%. So for $2,000, he was ready to do that. And he's walking around on the streets right now. I think the whole thing is so ridiculous that they let him out with such a small amount, small bond, terrible. But nevertheless, law enforcement is working just as hard as they work to get that guy. That guy was just terrible at getting away with it, as he is the guy that sent, I believe it's six total letters that TMZ talked about. I was just looking at this. I think it's six where, you know, Harvey Levitt gets on, he says, okay, I'm not going to talk anymore. And then the next day he gets another letter. He goes, yep, I got another letter. Then I think there was one after that, but nevertheless, these letters, the Bureau is working industriously in their cyber division and trying to figure out if they can trace these emails. Remember, the emails came into servers that belonged to three different media platforms, two that were local, and then 12 hours later to TMZ, the first letter, and then multiple letters to the other, or to TMZ, and maybe to these other local platforms. We don't know, because the local platforms were really just going to law enforcement or the FBI saying, this is what's going on. So nevertheless, the Bureau hasn't forgotten about these letters. And the fact that this guy is this good, it reminds me of a case in Fort Worth. I didn't work this case, but I know the prosecutor who did. I've talked a lot about this case before, but it's basically these people that are so proficient at sending these sorts of communiques that threaten, that say they have their kids when, you know, they're off at camp or whatever, their parent can't get a hold of them. They mimic their voice from, you know, listening to them say, do a video on TikTok. Then they take that voice, extrapolate it, and then make a voice where they're screaming mommy or whatever. Anyway, there are people that are so good at this. They're so good at communicating layers deep with VPNs and other devices that they use that you just can't find them. And to think that the FBI and that unit, those specialists, can, in conjunction with a lot of companies, help with things like this. I really believe that that would be a very plausible avenue to contract this out to companies that, you know, also deal with this. They want to know who that is. And I'm not saying that these are the people who necessarily took Nancy, but I am saying this. I am saying that both the ransom notes and the abduction of Nancy served the same purpose, and that was to terrorize this family and to terrorize Nancy. And both perpetrators have become, in their minds, heroes. The ransom note people, because TMZ isn't talking about it anymore, even if they're getting them, those, and I wondered if the Bureau even asked them to please not anymore, to not feed that fire. I don't know. I don't know what happened. Maybe there's just no more. But in this situation, can you imagine the power this guy's feeling? First of all, let's talk about the ransom note guy. The power of everybody, or not everybody, but meaning people throughout the whole world knowing about this case, talking about his ransom notes, talking about how he's fooling the FBI, how nobody can find him. You know, use probably AI to construct the notes, the emails. At least everybody's saying, or TMZ has said, how perfectly written they are. I mean, that to me makes me think he used an AI program so it comes out perfect, not how this person speaks. Because if it comes out how he normally talks later on, or how he normally writes later on, if they do catch him, they're going to compare that to known writing samples. And that's not good. I've got to throw this in there. Just ask Patsy Ramsey. That's a whole nother thing. Greg McCrary and I cut that case up too, because we completely agree on that case. Ghost DNA or no ghost DNA. But nevertheless, I digress. So when we're talking about this case in the notes, the FBI is all over this. And I wouldn't doubt that they're trying to seek, you know, professional help within those realms, just like they did with Google, with peeling loose the layers to get that, those photo images we have, and the video we have. So again, I'm not saying that those were the people necessarily that abducted Nancy. I am saying that the purpose, in my opinion, it's caused the same result. It's caused the same result. And that was terrorizing this family. Okay, let's go to, I think this is my last one. Oh yeah, I wanted to say too in those notes. So I think it is interesting that in those notes, and this is why, and I'm not going to show the picture of the family just completely distraught in video one and video three. In video one, where, you know, there's been a deadline given, but no proof of life. Of course they wanted to pay. And of course the Bureau said, listen, people do this just to get money out of you, and they don't have your mom. They have nothing to do with your mom. I recommend you don't do it, but you can do it if you want. I mean, I'm sure those conversations were had, and Savannah Guthrie did not do it because there was no proof of life. And that makes a lot of sense in the world. So, but in those notes, there were particular clues that, according to what TMZ said, according to what's out there, is that nobody would know. It was too familiar. They named two of them. One was this broken floodlight, which people have brought up, and I think it's true. Is, and I looked everywhere. I could not find the picture of the broken floodlight. Maybe somebody else did. If you did, you got to make sure it's not AI, because people concoct it and make it look like that. Again, you're not allowed to have lighting. This is a no lighting place, so these lights typically aren't on. So for it to be broken would make a lot of sense anyway, because she might not have even known, because you have a no light pollution, so you can't really turn them on except for it's for, you know, very specific thing. Like you have somebody coming over, turn it on so they don't trip. Anyway, and the other thing they mentioned, though, that specifically they talked about was the Apple Watch on the nightstand. Now, that is a detail that I found very interesting and important, but it goes back to the fact that whoever did those notes, the ransoms, and whoever this crime, I still believe it has an inside trait to it. even if it's a loose trait, it has somebody who knew the layout, who knew the house, who knew she was there, who knew her deal. So, you know, I do 100% believe that law enforcement knew the importance of at least taking those notes seriously and having the family direct speak to the takers, hoping to open communication. Remember, the second video is the brother who says, listen, we want to communicate. You have to give us an avenue to communicate with you, and you have to show us our mom's alive, right? He was the serious, very short video. And then the third one is after the ransom deadline came and went. And apparently we don't ever see the quid pro quo. In other words, that if you don't give me the 6 million, then your mother is going to be killed. We don't see it, but it's intimated because in video three, they say, just, can you give her back? Can you give us this piece so we can celebrate with her? I mean, it was so sad. That was really one of the saddest ones. They're all sad, but where it seems to be that they're just begging for their mom's body to come back in that third video because they missed the deadline. Nevertheless, there was no proof of life, so it could have just been these horrible people like that case I told you about. And in fact, I'm going to put that case together. I have it put together. I just need to dig it up. And so you guys can see the kind of people that do these ruses. They're not about the money. They don't even care about the money. They care about torturing the people on the other end. That's what we don't know in this case. Is this torturing the people on the other end, or is this Occam's razor? Listen, they had this grand plan. They went in, they took her. She died before they could even get to the part of sending, legitimate ransom demand. And they just bailed. Abort, abort, abort. That's why that desert needs to be searched. 4,000 bodies have been found in that desert in the last many years. I think I looked at a 9-year time frame. 4,000, everyone. I think that was just through 2004 or 2005. And that was maybe 9-10 years before that. That's it. It's a lot of bodies. I say this because it's so easy. And never see that person ever again. So finally, I want to talk about the glove. You know, I did a post right after, within like 5 minutes of the information coming out on the glove, because it wasn't yesterday. It wasn't the day before. It wasn't the day before. It was like 3 or 4 days ago that came out. And I should have made my tweet probably clear, because then it was funny to see all the confusion later, which I felt terrible about. I mean, just confusion on other platforms and things and in the media. But that glove wasn't even the glove that law enforcement cared about that said had many of the characteristics. It was just one of the 16. And that's why I jokingly wrote, no DNA, 15 more gloves to go. I was just making a joke. But I need to realize that sometimes most people probably are just sort of checking in. They're just scrolling past. They're like, yeah, what does that mean? And roll on. So I'm going to do a better job at sort of outlining sometimes my facetious comments. If this glove that they're talking about belonged to a restaurant worker, they have 16 gloves, I think, to go through that they took. And if you take it, you got to analyze it. And this one belonged to a restaurant. So basically, there's just a lot of litter bugs around there. And, you know, there's litter bugs everywhere, right? So those gloves weren't picked up. So they're working on all of them. But that was not the glove. At least that's what Nano says. That wasn't the glove that we all care about, which is the glove that was a mile and a half away. I don't want to say that we care about, but the glove that had some distinct characteristics that could be on the camera. So, okay, those were the three things I wanted to talk about. I really appreciate you all. I appreciate all the mods being here. I'm just looking over here to see if you guys have any questions or anything like that. You know, the doormat, Karen mentions the doormat in chat, and I couldn't agree with you guys more. We've talked about that doormat so many times. That doormat would have been one of the first things I took, because let me give you the perfect example, and I can't remember whether I pointed this out or not. for those of you who track the Brian Kohberger case, in the Brian Kohberger case, he stepped outside of Dylan Mortensen's door. Couldn't be seen with the naked eye. Couldn't be seen at all. Nobody knew he tracked anything. They did an amino acid test, probably multiple throughout that house, and his shoe print picked up. Remember that? The Vans. He wore a Van shoe, size, I think, 13 or something like that. That picked up outside the door. Why? Because he stepped in blood. And yes, do I think he wiped his shoes? Yes. Do I think he took care? But he didn't do good enough care. He did good enough care for 5 weeks when he had that car and washed it and washed it and washed it. I still am shocked that he was able to wipe that thing clean. But he wasn't on that shoe. And that doormat, Lockhart's theory, or principle, I think they call it. I call it a theory. Whatever, principle theory. When you go into a crime scene, you take something. When you leave with something. That's why it's always so important whenever they do catch this person or persons that they grab all their stuff, all their shoes, all their clothing, because there could be a hair of Nancy's that they missed. There could be a dog hair from Savannah's dog that they missed. There could be so many things on the clothing. So they have to take all that, all the shoes. So why wouldn't you take the doormat that the person stepped on, that he could have tracked something from where he really lives? Mud, particular mud where he lives. Maybe he has a dog. Maybe he stepped in his dog's crap and left some of that there. We don't know, and we'll never know, because now that doormat is done from an evidentiary standpoint. Done. So anyway, you know, I do not like to, I'm blue through and through, and I do not like to, you know, secondhand guess or secondhand evaluate. But a couple of these things, everybody, this is just, it hurts. Hurts to see it. And I really would call a lot of it unusual for us to see. I've droned on enough. I've got all this energy, but it's time to head out to the party. And let me see. Oh, yes, Christina. They have a glove that they found about a mile and a half away on the roadside, which I'm always optimistic, but it's very cautiously optimistic, because the glove they found, which the Post got a picture of, the glove they found had, according to law enforcement, similar characteristics. You know, remember how that glove, that isn't like a normal nitrite glove that fits so tight and, you know, you can really feel and manipulate. That thing looked like nine sizes too big. It even could have been layered. That's what I was wondering. Does he have the good gloves underneath, and then does he have a glove over top? And so we wanted to make sure it would be big enough. So we got, you know, mediums and then larges on top. I don't know, but I think it's possible. But they said that characteristics are the same. They got DNA off of that glove. They sent it to CODIS. There was no match. And now they're doing genetic genealogy. That is not the glove that they hooked onto some restaurant worker. It was one of the other gloves. And remember, I think there's 16 gloves. So that's why I joked around. 16 gloves, one in process, one down, 14 to go. You know, there's just more to go. Everyone, thank you for spending your Saturday afternoon here with me. Look for tomorrow morning. I will see you bright and early at probably 8 Central, 9 Eastern, and maybe even before that. But I will put up a StreamYard. And tomorrow I want to talk a little bit about the Missy Beavers case. I think it's important to do a little comparison here, because that case is unsolved and similar in some regards. So I want to talk about Missy Beavers, and that for sure. Remember, Monday, everybody, please hold your calendar. Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern, is Dale Lundberg. He was featured multiple times in the first 48. He's a wealth of knowledge. He and I had a homicide case. We worked together. And I mean, I just salty dude, but a great guy. He's one of these, like a chess player and a book reader and a philosopher. And he is so, his exterior is not at all what he is. And he still works. He still does investigations, although he's out of the big D, out of Dallas now, in a small jurisdiction. Really, I think he might even be volunteering and helping them when they have violent crime cases, because he's in a small jurisdiction like Adelphi that has no idea what the hell to do when something like that happens. And so he's lending some of his expertise. But great guy. If you ever see any reruns, Dale Lundberg on The First 48, I think he was in several of those, because we would give him crap. You know, he's a star. Anyway, everyone, thank you for being here. Thank you, mods. Until next time. May justice be served for Nancy and for all the missing.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.